Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this program is World Watchers. It's a one-hour program of news analysis, political assassination, and intrigue. And it's program number 724, October the 21st, 1985. After I'm through with the broadcast, I come home and type up these sheets, and sometimes I'm in a hurry. If I get the names misspelled, you can correct it on the sheet, or the number. Once in a while, we get that number turned around, but you can correct it and figure it out. If you take the broadcast every week, you can figure out, oh, May's in a hurry again. Okay, she typed this up and had to get off the tape center, but you can do a little correcting for me, and that'll be fine. I try not to do it too often. This past week, I was talking about a very, very important case, this Karl Heinz Hoffmann and his relationship to international terrorism, and I'm going to continue with that and his links to General Walker and the propaganda machine that moved to the United States in conjunction with Nazi Germany after the war. And I don't want to lose the threads of Karl Heinz Hoffmann. I started it a month ago because of his contacts with Stefano Della Chiaia and Joachim Fiebelkorn and Manfred Roeder. He's a pivotal person who did his early training in terrorism in the Middle East, in Turkey, India, Pakistan, and I don't have to tell you how primary those are in the news today, then set up his military sports group, which is identical to Franklin Camper and our training camps, our Soldier of Fortune reunions and camps on how to kill cutthroats, cut ears, torture, and so forth, blow up planes. And then his links to the old Nazi Waffen-SS and creating a new neo-Nazi group, his relationship to those people that I mentioned, and their links to the CIA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Galen Group, the BND, and also to the Aryan Nation, and throughout the United States, the interconnecting links of terrorism from the Middle East to Germany to the United States and to Italy. His Slick magazine, The Commando, which is similar to Soldier of Fortune, his secret society, the Skull and Crossbones. I'm going back to Karl Heinz Hoffmann probably next week, but there are so many items in the news now that I want to run through with you and not lose the threads. We'll be getting back to that, and also the things that I talk about today relate to these people directly or indirectly and should be mentioned. Now, last week I was talking about the street theater of Ronald Reagan and what was happening in the Middle East as a result of the murder of Mr. Klinghoffer by allegedly four Arab commandos. I know something is wrong about it. I listed 9 or 10 things on the broadcast last week to think about, and I, as time goes on, we'll know more about who set this up, how many people were involved, because this is a big story of street theater, and it's a smokescreen for something, and the people that are acting so righteous act as if nobody ever died, no American ever died, and it has some other meaning that it will take a long time to digest. There was an interview with a passenger on that boat, Stanley Kubacki, K-U-B-A-C-H-I. He's 70 years old. He's a judge, and he lives in Philadelphia, and he said that he raised questions that have to be answered about this trip, and he maintained that there were at least 6 hijackers aboard the ship. Mr. Mubarak on 60 Minutes said it would take 20. There have to be some people trained in karate and weapons and so forth. Security, just 4 people couldn't do this whole thing. He says there were 6 that he knows of. He's convinced in his mind there were more than 4, so as usual, as with the SLA that Ronald Reagan and Ed Meese and the CIA set up, 6 are burned on the evening news, burned in Los Angeles alive, and 3 get away, the Harrises with Patty Hearst, and then the network that set it up, the Scotts and an entourage of about 20 others that stay in the periphery that create the street theater scene. You never see them or know them, and this is what happened in this hijacking. There's an outer circle, just and then there's visibly a certain amount, and out of that, a few are sacrificed, and the others maybe get a slap on the wrist, and the planning goes on for the next operation. But this judge, Stanley Kubacki, made a statement that he said he talked to the hijackers, he addressed them, and he said, "Why are you doing this? None of us know or are concerned with Middle East politics." Now, just project that into yourself, your family, your future, the people you know. That's no excuse anymore. The Germans said we didn't know there was a camp at Auschwitz or Dachau. People are going there and coming home after a day's work there to be with their families or to procreate more children and make a little love at night. And the musicians were going back from playing concerts as the people entered there and were absorbed into the musical community besides being the Auschwitz musicians. But the excuse of people 70 years old living in Philadelphia with all the murders and all the mayhem that's gone on just in that city alone should teach the man something about life. But when you get on a ship and you go sailing anywhere today, when you get on a plane, when you walk out your front door, when you stay in your home and buy food from the grocery store and don't know what it was sprayed with or what it was injected with or what medications you're supposed to get complications from, you are living in a battlefield. Maybe it always was, but we didn't know of it. Today it is. And if you're going to go to the Middle East, you better know Middle East politics. If you're going down to New Zealand, you better know New Zealand politics. There's no excuse for stupidity. And to say to these people who have suffered so much at the hands of America and Israel and the Jamal family in Lebanon and from Nasser and Arafat and the whole gang, Mubarak, there's been pain all around this area and people shouldn't go into it if they don't understand it. And I just feel that this stupidity is no rationalization anymore for whatever happens to you. Now, as far as street theater, and pardon me, I'm very cynical. When Mr. Klinghoffer came home, his wife is clutching the flag, kissing her hand and touching it. Nobody does it like Jackie, and we don't have a million Jackie Onassises. I don't know what this is. Ronald Reagan sends a letter. He says that Klinghoffer was an innocent victim of terrorism and inhumanity that plagues the world. Inhumanity is on the back street of your hometown. It's not over there. And to single this out as if we are so virtuous, and he says the pain you feel is shared by all Americans, I don't believe it. We stand with you in prayer at a difficult time. There are so many difficult times and bloods being spilled around this world. I just hate hypocrisy in Ronald Reagan's speech to her. And then, as if election year is next week, but it'll be in a year for the senators, I suppose. But Daniel Monahan says Klinghoffer died because he was an American. He was a Jew because he was a free man. Why doesn't he talk about the Vatican deaths? Monahan is very close to the Vatican. The murder of John Paul I didn't outrage him. And here there's a book out in God's name, a movie being made, and witnesses to the Vatican crimes and drug dealing. There's 94 judges and police that have been murdered, tied to Banco Ambrosiano and to the Vatican Bank and Paul Marcinkus. What is this that they're worrying about a Jew and an American? And Senator Alphonse D'Amato, who's literally the senator from the Vatican, who lies and helps lie and cover up with his friends that Mengele is dead. And he's not dead. He's out there floating around, and Jack Anderson even has his aliases. And I'll share those with you in a few minutes. So he wants a Congressional Medal of Honor for Mr. Klinghoffer because he went over the side of the boat. Now, William Sapphire, hear these articles rattling. I have so many of them, and I suppose you have too if you've been following it. Sapphire had an article October the 14th. A daring intercept is not an anti-terrorism policy. And he asks, how does Reagan react to the bombing murder of an Arab American in California? Here's a very peaceful man sitting at his desk. They come in and throw a bomb into the place. Nobody bothers to see him. No medals. No state funerals. They ought to send his body back to the countries in the Middle East and have a ceremony on the terrorism of living in Los Angeles. On that case, it's silence. Another story, Reagan used open radio line to order intercept to pirates. He wanted to be heard. He wanted to be the president of the United States who says, get them. And there was no coincidence that that line was open. Another article, October the 14th, Reagan sends letter of conciliation to the president of Egypt. October the 15th, the White House says it won't apologize to Egypt. Mubarak is on 60 Minutes just lambasting America and saying there were more than the amount of people said that were involved. And eventually it's going to sneak out. There's too many countries involved now that the true pieces of this, watch my word, listen to that. More is going to come out about this. As I say, this is tragic street theater, but we're the audience. As long as you buy it and it plays in Peoria It's for us to consume. Nobody else, I'm sure, has the feelings about this. Some of the people that hijacked boat were taken, you know, flown to Italy and then taken to West Germany on a bus. The bus had a crash, a 10-vehicle crash. It killed 3 people. It injured 21 others. The driver of the bus had 44 West Germans and their tour guide. And among them were 3 people that were killed in the crash. And a dozen of those passengers were returning from the ill-fated ship. So 12 of them were on this bus. We don't know if some witnesses were killed or not. How many coincidences make a conspiracy? And so passengers on that bus, few of them were killed, few were in critical condition. A group of them had come off the ship, and there won't probably be any more connection about the ones that were seriously injured and the dozen passengers who were on that particular ship. Now, the attorney in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills for Mr. Arturkovich is asking for his release. They say that this man is 85 years old, and now there's been the murder of an American Jew and the hijacking of the Kili Laro, and the Yugoslavians are acting as if it didn't happen. And those are the same people that want the head of the Ustashi, who has been charged with killing 6,000 to 7,000, but that was to make sure the charge held. It's closer to 20,000 to 50,000. So on the basis of this, they're saying, let the old man stay in this country. How can you trust a country to try Arturkovich at age 85 when they release this terrorist from Yugoslavia at this time? Logic fails me here. I studied it at Stanford and studied ever since, but it fails my mind what one has to do with the other. The Los Angeles Herald has a picture of Mohammed Abbas, the most wanted man in America. Who wants him? Is he the most wanted man in America? I can cite, and I have here just a few of the deaths that have taken place in the last 2 weeks. What is this story, that he's the only man, the only person responsible for those 4 hijackers, that they're saying that he was responsible, that his radio contact with the gunman aboard the ship, he says, was to induce them to surrender, and this has been recorded? Why are we wanting or calling him the most wanted man in America? I think William Pierce should be the most wanted man in America with a national alliance. The plans to cut the throats and kill every rabbi and hang every Jew from coast to coast on telephone poles, and his book is the Bible for people he worked with, if not still the Defense Department. Or Richard Butler up at the Aryan Nations, who expressed goal is to overthrow the United States, and their trial, the Aryan Nations, involves murder. This last week, there's testimony how they murdered one of their own with a sledgehammer on his head. Now, Arno de Borchgrave and the Wall Street Journal and all the newspapers are coming in behind this one death in a very surreal, unreal overdose of pouring out with D'Amato and the Monahan. Something, as I say, I'll put my finger on it in a while, but something is wrong. De Borchgrave wrote an editorial, Fish or Cut Bait, Mr. Reagan, and he tells about this tragedy on Achille Lauro, about this American, this defenseless American. Well, most of the murders I read that have to do with our intelligence community are, and killing people of our defenseless murders, they never meet eyeball to eyeball or hand to hand, not that I know of. And he says the constituents want to know why they sent you back for a second term, he asks. And then de Borchgrave says, America is as impotent as a $2 mule. Now, that gets the military industrial, where Mr. Moss, his partner in writing, and de Borchgrave want you to go on Reverend Moon. They want to whip you up into that military attitude. You're too weak. And this he wrote, this incident resembles a hijacking of the TWA Flight 847. And here they murdered a wheelchair-bound Leon Klinghoffer. And the terrorism goes on, and he's calling us an impotent nation, and that's the kind of fire that gets people really worked up. Now, the San Jose Mercury had two large articles just side by side, October the 10th. One is man killed during longshoremen's protest. And if you haven't seen pictures in your newspaper of Jackson Taylor, and it's on the wire service, he was hit and run over by a police car during a demonstration of the longshoremen in Baltimore. Get the picture. This man's skin was torn off. There's a picture of him with the police subduing him. And then the police car runs off and the flesh is torn off his skin. It's the most pathetic, agonized picture. They're waiting for the ambulance. He's dead. And down below it says, U.S. outraged by murder. And this has to do again with Mr. Klinghoffer. Getting back. Why isn't America outraged about the longshoreman running over a man in a picket line, a demonstration in Baltimore? In Germany, there were riots when a man fighting the fascists, the Nazis, he was part of the anti-fascist group, was hosed down and run over by a police car. The same thing of killing innocent blacks and women. They want a certain man, the police in London. He's not home, so they kill his mother. And the riots are set off. Where is the outrage of people, law enforcement, rolling down and killing and driving over these people who are alive? One, a picture of this horrified person who's subdued and then killed, Jackson Tyler, and underneath, U.S. outraged by murder, a single murder of Mr. Klinghoffer. The San Francisco Chronicle wrote a story, speculation on the motives of hijackers. And there had to be a reason. One story was that they were going to go to Egypt, but they decided, you know, what, to kill this man in a wheelchair. It doesn't make sense. Four high-powered hijackers that are tied up to international terrorism, multinational funding. What would they want to shoot one man in the head two times, throw him over, and then leave? There has to be a motive. They can't find it. But I think the motive is in the street theaters, in the pronouncements, in Macho Reagan on that live wire, the open telephone talking, and contacts with these various governments, which is going to boomerang on us. I'm waiting to see what in the world was the motive of this particular case. There's another story in the London Observer getting close to terrorism and motives, which has to do with the violent Palestinians wanting to put Arafat in a bad light and acting in certain ways that Arafat would appear weak because they're angry with his pacifism and they want a greater militance. This is from the London Observer, October the 6th. And Arafat was supposed to come to the United Nations. Now Reagan won't go if he's there. His members were supposed to go to London for meetings. He's kept out of that. Arafat, who would want maybe to sit down and come to some kind of accord and be known as a statesman, can't be allowed because weapons and guns and newsprint and interviews and experts and conversations on firing line and talk shows have to whip you up into this condition. You can't have a man like Arafat talking peace. And the article in the London Observer tells about the Israelis that were killed on Cyprus and Tunis and how the forces came along and the stronger than Arafat, the 417, that used to be the group that represented and protected Arafat, have gone off on their own and done this to make him impotent and take action in their own hands. Now, this is similar to the order being tried up in Seattle that are branched off from the Aryan Nations, where one knows something is going on. Richard Butler, still an emissary throughout the United States of the United States Nazis and international Nazis, while the order, a splinter group who uses his church and so forth, can be violent, and he as an organizer can stay out of it. But this article in the London Observer says that there's a puzzle on the 417. It was set up in 1970 by a close friend of Arafat's, Ali Hassan Salameh. Now, that's the guy who in 1978 was killed in a car bomb in Beirut, and he was believed to have been, he was behind the kidnapping and the murder, the hostage on the spot. It didn't take long. They were killed on the plane of the Israeli athletes, but they were also killed at a German Air Force base in the custody of the officials on the ground. They were shot from the outside in and not by Salameh, shooting from the ground to kill the athletes. So again, the people that were taking the athletes away and the Jewish athletes were murdered. And then this very violent group, the 417, are supposed to be behind the murders at Larnaca and that they were to show that Arafat is too passive. But the reason it's important to talk about these people is that they have connections to our CIA, to our intelligence, into our drug traffic, and that way it pushes Arafat in the background so that we can continue to whip up this steam and have this hatred and terrorism making the headlines all the time. Another story in the Washington Times, Reverend Moon's paper, Reagan outraged by killing on ship. He's outraged. I mean, you see those words all the time. But in the same newspaper, there's an article, Bodies Found in Honduran Capital. Authorities have found 20 decomposed bodies in the capital and its suburbs since September. This is the first 2 weeks in October, a newspaper said yesterday. None of the bodies has been identified. 90% are believed to have been murdered, the newspaper La Tribuna said. On Tuesday, authorities took to the morgue a decomposed body found in a river near the Air Force headquarters. It had no identification. Mr. Puerto, vice president of the Committee for Defense of Human Rights in Honduras, told the Associated Press that his group would investigate the deaths. These are not common crimes to me. It is worrisome that a large number of bodies are like this. It should alarm the world. The human rights leader said that 170 leaders of labor, of students, of peasants, of social groups have disappeared in the Honduras in the last 5 years. 170 leaders have gone out of the Honduras in the last 5 years from these groups. And he said these may have been killed by the same police or criminals. Now, in this newspaper, Reagan is outraged by the killing, the singular killing, but not enough. He'll send hunks of millions of dollars to Honduras, where 170 leaders have been killed that could make society a little better. Now, the Wall Street Journal came in on the act, of course. Leon Klinghoffer's legacy, an editorial. The body of Klinghoffer is now in a makeshift morgue in Damascus, Syria. And it goes into terrorism and the irony of a single death coming after years of civilian deaths in that region that have such a profound effect. Mr. Klinghoffer's legacy will be to shatter this decade-old illusion of the Middle East peace process. Now, maybe they've hit on it, that there really are solutions, and we could have them, but this shatters it by throwing Klinghoffer over the side with the two holes in his head. Any illusion of peace is over in the Middle East. That's the Wall Street Journal. And the people that they represent, the business interests in the country and around the world, make a lot of money off of singular deaths, more than mass deaths. I mean, they just eat it up. The Washington Times had another article. The one wasn't enough. An editorial by Du Borchgrave, again, with a photograph of Leon Klinghoffer. Maybe it's our sacred belief in individualism that counts for our government, Du Borchgrave writes. It's called Organization Man. Our government's policy of fighting terrorism with wanted posters. We hung them up after the murder of Robert Stethem on the TWA flight 847. Now we're doing it for the murder of Leon Klinghoffer. Call it the revolt of the bill posters, but he goes on to say the people are outraged properly. The White House wanting to know, and the Klinghoffer represents so much this fine person, alone the individuals, these individuals. He says it's more necessary to restrict our retaliation to these individuals than it would have been to kill only those individuals in the SS who gunned down 86 American prisoners at Malmondy. Listen to this again. It would be fine to get hold of the actual murderer, but it was doubtful that we will, and merely punishing individuals is insufficient. Terrorists trigger men, after all, are merely foot soldiers in an army that is waging bloody warfare against the United States and its ally, primarily Israel. It is no more necessary to restrict our retaliation to these individuals than it would have been to kill only those individual SS who gunned down 86 American prisoners at Malmedy. Now, remember, it was Senator Joe McCarthy who let them all be released as his first job in the Senate, along with Germans from Wisconsin who were close connected business-wise and psychologically with the Nazis in Germany. Joe McCarthy let them all out, those that were supposed to hang, those that were supposed to have life in prison or 10 years, including Fritz Kramer. They were all released. What is this BS about even referring to the murders at Malmedy? They all got off if we're so lenient there, let's get lenient also with the murder of Mr. Klinghoffer. I don't know what this is all about. Another article, this is another large one. You've seen how much there is. This is the Seattle Times. Israel vows to avenge the hostage's death. Now, the boat didn't go to Israel. There was no one from Israel on the boat. It was an Italian ship. It was an American person. There were PLO. Israel is going to avenge the death. And then in the same week, I read that Israel is sending mercenaries all over the world to the fascist dictatorships. They're hiring them like mad. The El Salvadorian property owners, the South Africans, the Israeli killers are used as special bodyguards to go out and kill people with less reason to be killed than this person had, who represents America, who's put so many troubles over there. They're killing native population or being moved out of their homes and starved to death and persecuted just for a day's wages or just to stay alive. So the Seattle newspaper has an article, "Why did this have to happen?" Ask the neighbors of the murdered America. Why? Because we're Americans. Why? Because we have given terrorism around the world. Even, it's so pathetic, they had Marcos from the Philippines on 60 Minutes this week, and he was asked about 500 murders or so in the Philippines the last year, and he burst out laughing. Marcos actually burst out laughing. He said, "Can you imagine that?" He says, "You have more murders in New York," and I don't know which city, he said San Francisco or Miami. 500 is nothing to you in 1 year. Ours go into the hundreds, probably a few thousand. I forget the statistics of the handgun murders and various political murders and things like the labor union and whatever it is that's going on in this country, poisonings and so forth. And he was laughing at America. How do you dare say that we have these murders? So the Klinghoffer thing is something that not only reeks of hypocrisy and of motive. There's, as I say, the intrigue is there, the excuse to break up any rapprochement in the Middle East, to keep things bubbling. Bubbling is what we like to do, and that's what we do the best. And when Ronald Reagan was running for governor, not governor, for president, I was on the air since 1971, he was governor till 74, talking about him continuously and then saying when he was going to be president, this is what we had in California, the terrorism that we had in California. It's just a sample of what's going on in the Middle East. Now, there are other murders in this country that I can't believe that Mr. Abbas is the number one criminal. There's an article in the San Francisco Examiner this week, Stanley Lim died, the well-known and longtime compliance officer for the San Francisco Human Rights Commission. He was 49 years old, known for stopping the sweatshop conditions in Chinatown, the factories there. He set guidelines for minorities. He came to this country and went to high school in San Francisco, got a master's degree, was working on working conditions for Chinese. No explanation of how he died at age 49. The London Times has a picture of Christine Gabon from the French intelligence and tells how she goes to the Greenpeace and endears herself and becomes friends, and how they planned, if necessary, to kill everybody on the boat and blow up the Rainbow Warrior, and that the French, in fact, are testing the neutron bomb down there. And this past week, France says, we'll have it within a few years, and then we can use it, period. That's the bomb that kills the people and leaves the building. That's what they were testing down there. Is that terrorism, that we have the neutron bomb and they have the neutron bomb, and how friendships betray friendships, and the French intelligence are sent down there, and she enters the organization as their friend to get all the information they need to blow the ship up. There's an article in the London Times about that murder in Germany that I mentioned of Gunter Sare, S-A-R-E, 36 years old, knocked down by a hose run by the police, and then the police ran over him with their car. Is the world outraged that these things are happening in Germany or in any other country? I mean, is the man who drove the car that drives over an anti-fascist any different than the terrorism that's going on in the Middle East, where one man has died and we're looking for Mohammed Abbas and trying to overthrow various countries in the incidents? Why is Mr. Klinghoffer any different than Gunter Sare? Tell me, write to me or call me or just think about it, but I'm missing the point of why he is, and I know he isn't. He's a political animal. Now, there's a long The murder of Klinghoffer and the editorials and the holier-than-thou of Monahan, D'Amato, DeBorsch, Graf Wall Street Journal is too synchronized. It's synchronized just as the Korean airline went down and we had the death of Representative Larry McDonald. His name was never mentioned, but the Russians, the Russian system, the horrible Soviets, the beast, the adjectives that were used that were so bad, that within 24 hours, that were synchronized through the world media, just brought on a barrage of attack without investigating the evidence, which is destroyed, a lot of it, and locked up. But the same synchronization of this news story, the Klinghoffer death, not blaming the Russians, but this time the Middle East, and getting our feet into the escalation of antagonisms in that particular area is exactly what's happening. I'm going to take a one-minute break and go on to other deaths and stories that happened this week and see why is Klinghoffer getting all of this attention. It's a question we have to keep asking ourselves.